It's a little known fact that Cheerscast is a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Here we go, Sam. Your karaoke machine and some song catalogs to go along with it.
Oh, great. Just what we need. A loud, abrasive, noise-making machine.
Fresh. Come on, don't pick on something that can't defend itself.
Thank you, now.
You want to go where everybody knows your name.
Hello, and welcome back to Cheerscast, the podcast where everybody knows your name. I'm your host, Ryan Daly, and joining me once again, the host of Norm, a Cheers podcast that, interestingly enough, is about to wrap up its final episode, despite starting several years after this podcast, and I am not upset about that at all. Please welcome back Marlene Stemme. What's up, Marlene?
Hey, Ryan. It's good to be back with you. Even though I had my own podcast that started after yours, I always enjoy coming and talking to you about yours, particularly this episode, I have to say. So it's good to be back.
Always enjoy having you back. And congratulations on nearing the completion of your show. That is really fantastic.
Thank you.
Part of me wishes I was almost done with this show, but I also enjoy it so much that I don't mind if it takes me another year to...
I will say we're procrastinating on recording the very final, like the finale episode, because I don't want it to be over as much as I think it'll be fun to have it completed.
Yeah.
So it's still an emotional event.
My New Year's resolution was to have the show done by the end of 2027. 2.5 more seasons to get done in 2 years. I think I can do it with myself.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Anyway, folks, we're on a great episode. Marlene would settle for nothing less. This is season 9, episode 15, The Days of Wine and Neuroses, written by Brian Pollock and Mert Rich, directed by James Burrows, and the original air date was Thursday, January 24th, 1991. Robin Colcord is getting out of prison and sends Rebecca a white rose with a marriage proposal attached. Lilith throws Rebecca a bridal shower at Cheers, because where else would it be? Rebecca celebrates with drink after drink, and she's basking in her love and happiness until all of a sudden she's crying and screaming as only Rebecca can. The night before the wedding, Sam goes to Rebecca's apartment and finds her at the end of a 2-day bender. In her drunkenness, Rebecca confesses that she doesn't want to marry Robin because she doesn't love him anymore. Then she passes out in Sam's lap. Meanwhile, Cheers gets a karaoke machine, and Frasier may have found a new calling. Before we get into it, I will just mention Cliffy's It's a Little Known Fact. Kirstie Alley won the Emmy Award for her performance in this episode. Mm-hmm. Rightly deserved. Yes. She hits all of the emotional beats. She does all of the things that we expect of Rebecca. And I have talked about this at the beginning of the season, earlier episodes, how Kirstie Alley suffered this miscarriage in the middle of this season. It had she the character actually been revealed to be pregnant, they would have worked that into whether or not Sam is the father or Robin is the father. That was going to be a whole plot line. They didn't actually bring that up because the baby wasn't meant to be. But you could see after when that would have happened in the filming schedule, Rebecca's role is kind of diminished. And I think maybe they were sensitive to that. They weren't sure what to do with her exactly. And she was just kind of in the background. But by the time we get to this episode, like, there's a rawness to this performance that I would not be surprised if, as an actress, she's kind of channeling some of the grief, anxiety, anguish that she was going through.
I'd never thought of that. That's interesting, because I remember reading about that when it happened. And I want to say it was close to the beginning of the season, because that second episode that she's not in, except for the teaser, is when I thought that that was going on. But, I mean, it's been
from years,
what I don't know, but I do remember that.
I think it was around episode 6, 7, or 8, somewhere in that range that they were filming those. But
that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that, like what she would be, like what, if anything, she was pulling from in this episode. Because all of the emotions, like you talked about the emotional range that she goes through, and some of it's like all together, all at once, which I think is probably the most remarkable part. Like, you can be laughing and then it's heartbreaking at the same time.
Yeah.
You know?
I know the answer to this, but big picture, what did you think of the episode?
It's my favorite. I think this is, you know, not, I don't want to say controversial, but I think that it exceeds the last act, especially the crucial part in the apartment, which is only, I mean, it's 8 minutes, but I think that it's better than the show itself. And I don't say that in any way to diminish Cheers, but it's almost like it's just too deep in some ways, but not in an overbaked way. It's not that they made it be overly dramatic or anything. It's just perfect. So I don't know. I think every time I watch it, I'm sort of elated, which is an odd reaction, but I think it's there's something really freeing about Kirstie Alley's performance, as well as it just being so funny.
Yeah. It's incredible.
It's just, I mean, it's like all of, I don't want to say all of a sudden, because I think the episode gets better and better and better as it goes. Mm-hmm. But I think it's just the best of Cheers. It's her best performance. I could make an argument, I think, that it's the best performance in Cheers. And I think that all of the other characters aren't left behind. Like, they all have some funny part or something important in the story as well. So it's not like anyone's getting the short end of the stick in this one.
I mean, you know, getting way too far ahead, but I almost made a case that somebody else was the MVP over Rebecca.
Uh-huh.
And then I was like, I can't do that. I can't in good conscience do that. But there was another character that I was like, man, that is incredible. So,
well, I just focused on my runners up because to me, it's just, it's not even a runaway performance. I just think it's so stunning that it's like, okay, well, that's clear. Right. And then we need to think about the rest of the people and how great they were.
Yeah. Getting into the episode, we got a short little teaser, and this is one of those teasers that you can tell was just like the first 45 seconds of Act One, because like the way that it transitions. But we start off, the jukebox at the back of the bar isn't working. The repairman, a guy named Walter, can't fix it there. He has to take it back to the shop, and like Sam doesn't even have a line there. He doesn't even respond. He just kind of like rolls his eyes, like looks away and everything, and he kind of goes back to the bar, and Cliff takes this opportunity to say, you know, taking the thing back to the shop, that's, you know, one of the oldest ploys in like this, you know, mechanics. To, it to squeeze more money out of Sam. He's like, all the jukebox really needs is a good little gentle kick to get things working. And Cliff kicks it. And of course, you hear an almost cartoonish sound effect of broken springs and sprockets just like kind of falling apart. It's like, shop time, Sammy.
Right.
And then immediately coming out of that, Cliff is just walking back to his seat. So this is literally like the next scene, the next part of that. And Woody's asking, what will they do without the jukebox? Cheers won't be the same without it.
Mm-hmm.
We get a great little bit from Paul to kind of set up that this two-part is part of Paul's ascension to the third barfly with them, which really comes up in the next episode after this one. But he's like, no jukebox, I'll feel naked or something like that.
And Frasier is constantly perplexed, like, why he's just his character is really interesting in this, I think, not to get too far ahead, but he's completely just gratingly grumpy until he starts singing. And then there's like there's this addiction motif that sort of goes between the storylines. That's another part I find, an obsession motif. That's another thing I find really interesting about it. But here he's just like constantly like, you never play it. It's almost like he's so agitated because this keeps repeating. They're like, what are we going to do? We'll never. What is it like with this? They ask about a cigarette machine. He's like, we wouldn't use that. And he's like, you never use the jukebox.
It's like, why do you care? It's like, you never play this thing. And Norma's like, I never play Vera either, but I would miss her if two guys wheeled her out of here on a refrigerator dolly.
Right. Which paints a picture.
And then Sam has this amazing moment that I love. He's like, look, it's not about the music from the jukebox. The thing is, it's the perfect height for it to lean on. Mm-hmm. And he kind of does this thing where he's like, you see the way this hits like the line of my body and sets a perfect way to like to pick up women and everything. And cue, a lovely blonde woman walks by and just says, hi. And you expect Sam to just run with that. But he's like, oh, no, I'm sorry, honey. I was just demonstrating.
But then he has the second, he's like, I'll talk to you later. He's not going to entirely pass it up.
Right. But he's like, not now. But it's also like, it comes so easy to him. Like, that it's so natural that you would have this encounter with a woman. He's like, I have to prioritize. I'm making a point here. Let me come back to you later.
Right, he's showing himself off.
Exactly. It is such a flex. It's incredible.
Yeah.
I just love it. I'm sorry, I was just demonstrating, and kind of shoos her away, like almost with his hand on her back, kind of pushing. He's like, later on, later. I'll get back to you. The guys come in, Walter, the repairman, who, by the way, Walter is played by Calvin Young. None of the, with the exception of B.B. Newirth and Paul, the three other guest stars, I couldn't really find much of note. Although Calvin, he was in one of the Lethal Weapon movies. I remember looking at it. Yeah. IMDb. He was in a lot of things, but like not like a big thing that I really noticed or remembered.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they're like, okay, we'll have the jukebox back to you in a week. And they're like, a week? How can we live without the jukebox for a week?
A whole week.
And again, Frasier's like, what are you what are you talking about? And they're like, well, don't you have a, Sam's like, don't you have a loaner? And he's like, well, not a loaner jukebox. I can give you a cigarette machine. And that's when Woody's like, we wouldn't use that. And Frasier, you never use the jukebox.
The jukebox.
I love that. And he's like, I can give you a karaoke machine. And Sam, interesting, Sam's like, what's a karaoke machine? And then
Walter starts to explain.
He starts to answer that, and Cliff cuts him off. He's like, Walter, if I may. And he's like, sure. And he's like, a karaoke is a self-contained musical gizmo of Oriental origin. And points to Walter, much like yourself.
It's almost like a little realization he's had, like a little positive realization they're sharing, like, much like yourself.
Yeah, he's like, you would know this. What a coincidence. And, like, Walter and Frasier kind of exchange looks, and Frasier just puts his hand away. He's like, oh, my God. Like,
yeah, I noticed
like,
that.
He's like, do I have to apologize for this guy? And Walter's like, no, I didn't.
Yeah, Walter didn't care. Frasier is taking care of all of the angst in the first part of this episode.
I know. He's like, I hear this. And then, but that I'll forget, that was one of my runners up for best get for home run. It's just like, it's a musical gizmo of Oriental origin, much like yourself.
It's John Ratzenberger's delivery too, because it's kind of like, it's positive, but you're like, is that positive? Well, I don't know. He seems okay, but Frasier seems kind of upset still.
There's nothing racist about it, but oddly racial for no other reason, which makes it kind of awkward. It's like,
right, but then it's sort of like everybody's reactions makes it even funnier because of that.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, he kind of continues. It's like, you know, it plays the background accompaniment to popular songs. So how does shower crooners like myself can sing along? And Carla, one of her few bits, she's like, I didn't know you did that. I'm impressed. She's like, what, that I sing? She's like, no, that you shower. Rebecca comes out of the office saying she found something from her Limerick a Day calendar.
Which is a stroke of brilliance, I think, to have Rebecca have a Limerick a Day calendar.
Yeah. Fun fact for listeners, maybe fun if you're interested. The Daly family, from which I hail on my father's side, is from the town of Limerick in Ireland. That's where they hail from. So. Carlos says, wait, I can guess the Limerick. There was an old lady named Bex who went a long time without sex.
That is good.
Rebecca's like, no, it reminded me that Robin gets out of prison on Monday. And Sam's like, well, that's wonderful for you, but you're forgetting something pretty important. Mm-hmm. She's like, yeah, I know. He doesn't have his money anymore. We'll have to start a life all over again. He's like, no. What was the limerick? And she's like, I can't believe you would care more about a limerick than my happiness. And Woody's like, no, I care about it. He's like, not me. And she's like, well, thank you, Woody. He's like, I care about him equally the same.
Oh, equally. Yeah.
And she walks away and he's like, oh, she saw right through me. I'm dying to hear that limerick.
I have two things to say here. I think it's great that we're about, 4 minutes in the episode. Both storylines have been introduced and everyone has had something funny to say at this point.
Yeah.
And the other thing, character related, is that Rebecca doesn't seem to remember that Robin is getting out of prison on a certain day until she sees it on her calendar. And no one in the bar has heard about this. Like, they're all like, because that's the whole joke, right? Is that like, no, I'm dying to hear the limerick. Like, okay, he's getting out of prison. She wasn't talking about it for weeks ahead of time. She really didn't even think about it until this came up.
Subconsciously, you know, foreshadowing like her true feelings about the matter.
Right.
That she had kind of emotionally moved beyond him. She just didn't want to accept that or didn't know how to. The delivery guys come in with the karaoke machine. And Frasier's like, just what we need, a loud, abrasive, noise-making machine. Norm's like, Frasier, don't pick on something that can't defend itself. To which unsolicited Cliff leans over. Thank you, Norm.
I always like, or I should say, I appreciate when Cliff takes the insults of the bar in stride and just appreciates that anybody stands up for him.
Right, exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. And Fraser, kind of like as he's judging this thing, this musical gizmo of Oriental origin, he starts flipping through the songbook that they delivered. He's like, oh, maybe I spoke too soon. This has a bunch of great standards and everything like that. And he starts rattling off all of these hit songs from the day. And Norm and Cliff saunter up and they push one of the buttons and they turn on the song Lollipop. The song originally written by Beverly Ross and Julius E. Dixon Sr. And they're doing the whole lollipop, lollipop, oh, la, 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 uh-huh. Lollipop. And then they just keep going. They're like, how does this song end? And I think we just keep saying lollipop until one of us drops.
Yeah.
And Fraser gets upset easily that they're, you know, ruining it. He's like, that is a stupid song. He's like, and that's not the best way to make a pop sound either.
And he's like, it's like this. And he does it. And then he said that emphatic hand gesture.
Right.
This is how it's done.
We get another delivery man coming in, this one played by Shad Willingham. And he comes in and he has a, for a delivery for Rebecca, it is a single white rose with a note, and she tips him a quarter.
Like, she runs over to the door like a child. She's like, I'm Rebecca Howe.
Yeah. And she's like, and this is for you. And he's like, a shiny new quarter. This will pay for my sister's operation.
Papers. Yep.
And he walks out and she's like, it's a white rose. What could that mean? And Carly goes, well, if it means the same thing as it does in my family, you better have Cliff start your car tonight. So she opens the note and it is from Robin and essentially asking her to marry him when he gets out of prison on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And
she's gushing doesn't even describe it. It's like when she says holy matrimony, it's just that breathy thing that she does.
Yeah. And she's running behind the bar. She's, you know, ecstatic, so happy. And, you know, everybody, they're congratulating her. Woody's like, you know, he's trying to make a nice little speech. And he's like, but I may not be the most inarticulate person in the world. And Cliff's like, don't you mean articulate? It's like, don't they mean the same thing, like flammable and inflammable? It's like, boy, I learned that lesson the hard way. And then Sam is like, Rebecca, I have to tell you, like, this is great, but I have a strict policy about not going to bed with married women. So if you want me, this is your last weekend to get me in bed one more time. She's like, oh, Sam. She's like, oh, like, you know, brushing him off. He's like, all right. It was a stupid role. Next weekend. We cut to a little bit later. I couldn't even remember if this was like the later the same day or if it was like the next day.
I think it's the same day because Rebecca's wearing the same outfit.
Yeah, they are.
I think so. Right. There's a weird thing with time in this episode, too. It's like I'm not quite clear which day is which I think you're probably supposed to feel because that's what Rebecca ends up going through.
Right. And we now have a bridal shower for Rebecca being thrown right away, like on the spot. And we find out that, of all people, Lilith threw the bridal shower. And Rebecca can't believe she would do that. Lilith is just paying Rebecca back since Rebecca threw one for her a couple of years ago when she got married. And Rebecca's like, oh, but I didn't really put any thought into that one. I just threw that together. And I was like, well, that would explain the napkins that said Mazel Tov, Cy and Effie Kupperman.
And then I like that Rebecca, it's almost like she's telling Lilith like a secret between them. She's like, I got a break on those when Cy Kupperman skipped town with his secretary. Like she's not telling the person it's actually affected. That's
exactly. It's like, that's great. You don't mention that to the person who was party through, which means you obviously went very cheap on her party. It's like you're confessing the reference.
When Rebecca walks off, Lilith is like, how lucky for me.
Yeah, exactly.
I noticed, too, that Lilith looks even darker than normal. Like, she's very buttoned down. She always has that more, a little bit more of that look, but it seems like it's extreme. And then Rebecca's in this, like, all-white outfit. I just think that's a great contrast for their back and forth.
But funny you mention that, because Lilith's outfit changes later in this episode when she's a lot more, for her at least, casual.
And her hair is down, too.
Yeah, the hair is down. She's wearing just a button-up shirt, but, like, only, like... like almost like rolled up sleeves or something and slacks and everything, much more sort of toned down for her, which is nice. Cliff starts to complain about the Mylar balloons at the top of the thing. And he's like, there's a safety hazard. And Paul is like, what are you talking about? And then you can instantly see he cringes. Oh. Like, I shouldn't have asked. I shouldn't. Why did I? He's like, well, Paul, let me tell you this. And he talks about how, like, the metallic content in the mylar balloons, like, they float up and they get caught in high tension wires and it creates some, a charge.
Sparks can and, like, it's
a shower of sparks. It can, the electricity can short out the power in a whole city. And they're like, all right, that sounds great.
Right.
And the three of them grab the balloons and they're headed outside to try this when they get stopped by Frasier, so that he can make a toast to a wonderful woman without whom they would not be there. And Rebecca's like, thank you. He's like, stop, shut up. I need to toast a little.
Pipe down.
Pipe down. That's what he's right.
Like, I love Rebecca's response too, because she looks so, like, genuinely flattered, and she's holding her glass up, and then she kind of turns and turns to Lilith, like, right as Frasier's. It's just very awkward, but it's funny when he says, like, to Lilith.
Yeah, and you see, like, Lilith almost seems surprised. She's like, oh, thank you very much. Yeah. And then Woody is like, you know, if I'm ever lucky enough to get married, I hope it's to a woman as wonderful as you. To Lilith.
That's a great gag.
Sam gives to Rebecca a very sincere and congratulatory toast. And then Rebecca starts giving her own toasts. And she mentions all of the guys at the bar who've stood with her these years, and she loves them all. And Lilith just kind of to up to the side of her mouth to Frasier. She's like, she didn't mention my name. Now you see exactly what Frasier was talking about.
She's and her, used to it. Yeah.
Her sort of false modesty when they were toasting her. She's like, I wasn't expecting this. And then Rebecca's like, hang on. I forgot. I've got another toast to make. And like, oh, she's going to bail herself out.
She's pouring more champagne every time she's making these toasts to, like, a whole new glass.
Yeah. And she's like, to Robin. Strike two. Like, wait. I'm leaving somebody out. To me and my happiness. And Lil's like, okay, Frasier, grab your coat. We're leaving.
We just heard Lilith at one point, and during one of the toasts, Lilith says, like, she's going to bail herself out.
Yes. And then as Frasier was getting his jacket, Rebecca's like, oh, and Lilith too. Thank you so much, Lilith. And she's like, oh, you didn't have to thank me. Frasier, why are you putting your jacket on? We're not going anywhere.
It's been about 2 seconds since she told him to put on his jacket.
And he's just sitting there like, oh, God, he puts it on.
God's sake.
And then at the other side of the ball, Paul kind of gets everybody's attention. And basically welcomes Norman Cliff out with the karaoke machine to sing a song for the bride. And of course they sing Lollipop again, but this time they're using the helium balloons to like up the pitch of their voice. They've got those helium voices.
Yeah.
Frasier intrudes, shuts them down, walks over there. He's like, that's,
you know, he immediately gets up. And, like,
yeah, he is insulted by this choice of song and the occasion.
This lovely party his wife has thrown. But he says it as though they're at some fancy club or something. Like, they're just right there at Cheers. I don't know exactly what he expects, but I thought that was funny.
So Frasier, he puts on Isn't It Romantic? And he's like, this is a much more appropriate song. But, like, you don't even make any funny voices. How is this a classic? And the best part about this is when he cues up the song, he takes the cigarette from one of the guys standing by the bar and takes a drag, like he's doing, like, one of the, like, that's Frank Sinatra type of crooner, like, guys.
But it's not even somebody standing by the bar. It's someone that's not paying attention.
Yeah,
it's this is, like, one of my home runs. It's somebody that's not even paying attention, not part of the goings on. He's just kind of on that, whatever that ledge thing is, the shelf over on the
side. Yeah, between the hallway and the office, yeah.
And he goes over and he's like, may I? And just takes it out of his hand.
And just takes a drag of it. And then he starts singing. He's got this whole Rat Pack, Dean Martin, just, Frank Sinatra type of vibe to him. As he's
and the timing of how he smokes with how he's singing. It's
exactly the timing of that. Yeah. Back at the bar, we see Rebecca sitting on the bar next to Sam, and she's swaying and she's toasting to Champlain.
She says, like, this is great Champlain.
Yeah. And she's like, can you believe it? I said Champlain when I meant to say Champlain.
Plain. I love how, because it's all of these things are building up to this, like, drunk performance, but she pours the champagne and she puts the bottle down, like, a little too hard.
Yep.
Like someone that can't really gauge weight anymore. Yep. You know, and then she's, like, smacking him on the shoulder. It's just, everything's a little bit drunker as she goes on.
Yeah.
The champagne thing never fails to make me laugh.
Right. And Sam is trying, you know, they basically get her to stop. He's like, I think you've had enough. She's like, no, I want to toast more. He's like, you're toasted plenty. And she gets more champagne. She's like, I want to toast to me and Robin. We may not have much, but we have each other. And Carla's, and you don't have much.
And
throws the cup over her shoulder off the bar, yeah, and then gets another one. And mm-hmm. she's like, I want to toast to love and commitment and my stupid, stupid life. It just goes from drunken giddiness to Rebecca as a wreck, which we've seen. Right. And just walks up and doing the whole thing where she's like shaking her hands.
And she still has the glass, like the martini glass in her hand, yeah, too. But Sam, doesn't Sam, like, he helps her down. He says that he's like, you know, you've had enough. But when she reaches up to the rack, it reminded me, just visually, it reminded me of Redux. So like way back in season 3, when Sam comes in and he's like barefoot, he crawls across the bar and he grabs like a glass from that same location.
Yeah. Nice. Nice callback. Yeah.
I thought it was.
So she runs past Frasier, you know, screaming, crying, telling him to shut up and leave her alone. He's like, well, give me a break. I've had no formal training.
Because the cutbacks between him singing Isn't It Romantic and smiling, he's happy now, and like her screaming is good, which, too.
I got to say, and we'll come back to this, but part of this episode was just giving Kelsey Grammer and B.B. Newirth an excuse to sing.
To sing.
Which we'll get to.
Yeah.
We cut to 2 days later. Frasier is singing again, and holy expletive deleted, what is he wearing? Did you see that sweater, that cardigan?
Oh, I saw the sweater, but I want to first note the way that he enters the scene, because you hear the music, and then he's like soft stepping, like bopping down the hallway with that little smile on his face, and then you see this cardigan on him. It's just the whole presentation. He set that up, like he's using the hallway of tears to do, yeah, his performance, basically lead into it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's got like, is it Yogi Bear on there? And then there's some writing.
It's like, I think it's Baloo, like from like the Jungle Book or like.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
And then there's like a phrase or a poem or a verse or something on like the right side of, but his arm is kind of blackened, but it's also like a canary yellow, like with like a kind of like purple lapel or pink. Like it's loud colors and
it's not flattering on him either, let's say.
Who would wear that? Like, why would a professional psychiatrist like Frasier ever wear that? But it's,
well, he's a performer now, though.
Now he is. And he's singing the song Hey There by Richard Adler and Jerry Ross. This is from the movie, from the musical
Pajama Game,
yeah. Okay. From the movie Pajama Game. That the creative duo also did Damn Yankees, which I'm more familiar with.
Okay.
And he's singing, it's a dialogue song, so he's singing both parts.
Yes. It's like, are you talking to me?
Yes. And Lilith walks in, and this is where she's wearing like dark slacks, but she's got like a kind of burgundy or wine colored blouse, mm-hmm, but it's kind of lower for her lower neck and kind of sleeves rolled up and buttoned up, and her hair is down. It's like, it's not like flowing, it's in a ponytail, but it's down, so it's a much more, I dare say, normal look,
casual or something.
But it also just accentuates how beautiful she is, and it's like, mm-hmm, yeah. And she walks in from the other side and she tells him to stop, and he's like, he's like, during my tribute to Adler and Ross, I don't think so.
I think not.
He refused. And you see, Flint Cliff isn't there, but Norm and Paul are both at the bar, like heads buried, faces buried in their hands. Mm-hmm. And Lilith starts to walk by, and Norm like grabs her and pleads with her. He's like, you got to make him stop. And she says something. She's like, it's a dangerous combination, a karaoke machine and an obsessive personality whose parents used to play Broadway cast recordings to drown out the sound of their lovemaking.
And she says it very drolly, like very matter of fact.
Yeah.
Rolls her eye.
Almost like she's had to deal with this before. Almost. Right. Like she kind of knows about this. Right. We find out that Rebecca hasn't been to the bar in 2 days. Should Sam go check on her? He's not sure. And he asks Lilith, and she says, I'll tell you what I tell my patients. What do you think? And nonplussed, he's like, and they pay you for that? And she's like, what do you think?
But he also, doesn't Woody say something about like, she's getting married tomorrow, she probably has to find something to wear. And Lilith says, yes, it's not like Cy and Effie Coverman left her a wedding gown.
And they do the cat thing.
Yeah, right.
Here's where, yeah, we get to her apartment, which we have been to before. The lights are down. You can only see, she's like, good use of lighting because it's really dark. It's
excellent.
But we have no trouble seeing her. Like, on that couch and everything, it's pretty clear. So we kind of get an impression. And she kind of gets up and she heads to the door and opens it and kind of like,
wait, doesn't she say like, hold your horses?
Hold your horses. Like that. Pulls open the door, but like slow, like falls with it and like opens it on her own face. And she says, ow. And you see Sam kind of looks through the crack between the door frame and the door. And you just see her cigarette poking out and she's breathing smoke out.
There was something about that that reminded me of Carol Burnett. There are a few things in this episode that remind me of something that Carol Burnett might do.
Yeah, I can definitely see that, yeah.
Yep.
Sam turns on a lamp. Like once they go and she kind of collapses, she's like, hang on, I'll turn on the lights.
Let me open the blinds. And she just sits down and, exhales smoke.
And makes no attempt to light it. So Sam turns on the lamp and then she reaches over and turns it back off. Sam turns it on again. She reaches back over, turns it off. And I love this bit. I've loved this moment since I was a kid. He just grabs the thing and goes,
leans over,
click. And she reaches over and turns it back on. Oh, I'm like surprised. It's like Bugs Bunny logic.
That is a great joke. That was good thinking on Sam's part.
Because it's like, of course, that would be his solve for it. It's something from a cartoon. Yeah.
Right.
So.
And she's kind of blinking like she hasn't seen light in days.
In a while, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's like food discarded everywhere. There's bottles everywhere. More bottles than actually we can see, which will become a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And there are pictures on the walls that are it's like slanted and, you know, even the ones that are above her height are like twisted at an odd angle. So it's just the whole thing is a wreck.
She's wearing kind of a sort of ratty, you know, bathrobe, housecoat thing. She's wearing a Yukon shirt, which is a nice little callback.
Yes. I have a point about that in a bit.
Yeah. Because, that is an established thing. She went to the University of Connecticut. Yep. And I think when they were painting her apartment, was she wearing a UConn shirt, I think?
Oh, I think she was. She was wearing a sweatshirt. That sounds familiar.
Or maybe it was a...
I'm not sure if I'm misremembering, though.
Was it when she threw the party for Carla?
Carla.
They had like a slumber party, a girl's slumber party.
She was wearing a sweatshirt then, too. Sounds right.
Anyway,
but I don't remember.
Yeah, anyway, it's like she's this is an established thing, so I like that. He's like, Sam asks her if she's getting cold feet, and she's like, no, I'm not nervous. I'm totally ready to marry Robin. I'm just not particularly looking forward to it. She takes
that line is. She's like, I'm perfectly prepared. What is it? She says, like, I'm perfectly prepared to marry Robin and spend the rest of my life with him. And there's a pause. She's like, just not particularly looking forward to it. She's almost like she's saying it to herself.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, she's like kind of just, it's like almost under her breath, like it's a like an admission to her own.
She says something about she stands up and she kind of like sways back. Like you can see him almost going to catch her. And she's saying something about it's one thing to marry someone that's serving time for you and another to serve time with them. Like that's clearly her mindset.
Right.
And then the part that I think is interesting with the University of Connecticut sweatshirt, there's something about it that makes her seem younger in a way. Mm-hmm. And when she's walking around, she says to Sam, like, I haven't even begun to taste life. But there's something almost like she's had this revelation that there's more than what she's been doing. I mean, obviously, you know, we know she doesn't like her career. Mm-hmm. She has bad relationships. But we don't know that much about her, but she's talking about how she has it. Like, just maybe there are other options out there for her. But then she says, I just discovered this drinking thing. So it's almost like she almost had this option to do something different, but instead she's decided that she's just going to stay in her apartment and drink. You know, I don't know. I find that so interesting.
What I like about this moment, I think what you were kind of getting to is she's not just drunk. She's having an existential crisis that this pending marriage has put her to. And you're right. Like, she could take this opportunity to make a broad change of her life and her direction, but because she's a screw up, she just drinks.
Whatever reason, she's just gonna drink.
And she does it when she's walking around the couch. She kind of crawls onto the table behind the couch, lays down, and then grabs one of the couch cushions to use as a pillow. But when she pulls it up, she reveals there's two more wine bottles behind the cushion that were just there.
That's so good. Yeah. She's lying there and she's kind of like looking at her fingernails while she's talking, which I feel like is a very sort of drunk thing to do, to just be hyper-focused on something meaningless like that, you know?
Yeah. And they have this, you know, kind of back and forth, kind of Sam topping her. He's like, he's been where she is because he's an alcoholic. He's had a bad relationship because he was divorced once. And she kind of gets up and calls him on this. She's like, hey, you know, I have a few drinks, but you are an alcoholic. I'm having some trouble with this thing, and you were divorced. She goes, do you retain water in the middle of the month too, Sam?
It got a big response for that.
That did, rightly so, because that was one of my favorites too.
It's great, but it's also, I think, shows like how similar they are, and she knows it. They're of like kind, you know.
Yeah, because it's like, it's so preposterous that she's not asking it seriously, but she doesn't say it like insultingly. It's just kind of, it's just to let the preposterousness of the question hit him. But so the whole thing is she's been drinking because she's not sure if she still loves Robin, which is like this huge thing. And when she admits that, and he's like, do you think there's a chance you don't? She's like, I don't know. I just wish there was, you know, I had more time to think about it. And she's like, is there any chance that parole board would keep him in prison a little while longer?
That she's so good in this too, because when she says like, I don't know, there's this very like fleeting expression of pain on her face. And then she turns and makes asks the question about, do you think they could keep him in a little longer?
And here she kind of starts to, I forget how she gets into it, but she starts to remember kind of the greatest experience of her life. She's like, you know.
Sam tells her that if she doesn't love Robin, she could back out of this. He's kind of just being a gentle counselor. Yeah. And she's aghast at this thought. She's like, I'm supposed to tell the richest man in the world I don't want to marry him. And Sam reminds her he's not rich anymore. And then she like drops back on the couch. Like she's sitting atop and then she like drops back down. She's like, that's right. What's his number? And it goes through her address book. And that's when he tells her to get serious. Mm-hmm. And she says that she is serious. And then they go into that one time in her life.
Right. The other thing about this scene, and I guess like I'm always kind of thinking about the scene in these moments with the idea of Sam's alcoholism being in the background, because they actually bring it up.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of thinking, I was like, would this trigger him being in this room with her in this state with all of these bottles and everything? And I was like, oh, he works in a bar. Like, it's kind of like, it's clearly that if he was going to be tempted to drink or something, like the temptation is around him 10 hours a day, if not.
Right. So. And I think that he sees, not debauchery, that's not the right word, but he sees like the, it's more than disarray. And I think he's like kind of looking at her and seeing like, this is kind of how I started, or this is what I went through.
Yeah.
So I don't think that he's really, I don't see that as a temptation, because he's kind of like cleaning up the bottles. He's picking up stuff. He's trying to kind of tidy things up for her, take care of her, you know? So I know.
Yeah. This is like definitely, this is Sam. Seeing, like, this is the
she's
good
going friend. Down the path I went down.
Right. Right. And he is uniquely qualified to maybe help her and steer her out of this. Just besides the fact that he loves her as a friend or as whatever, like he sincerely cares about her and wants the best for her. But she starts talking about, she can't, you know, when she thinks about marrying Robin, she just keeps thinking about like this one, the greatest experience of her life is, and she kind of goes into there and he's like, oh, I think I know where you're going.
She's so
with this.
Like, wait, at one with another being or something
this
like
that. Magical feeling of intimacy and connection with another being. And she's going on. And he's like, yeah, I'll never forget the night we made love. She's like, oh, I was talking about the time I came in first place with in that horse show or something.
When she was 10.
She's like, oh, but the sex with you thing was pretty good too.
Right. And he's just being gentle. He leans over to like kiss her hair, you know, and like right when she says that about the horse show.
And she finally just sort of comes to it. She's like, and it, like it settles on her like a weight. She's like, yeah, I don't love him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with that realization, it's time to celebrate with a drink. And she
Is this the lampshade? Isn't that the lampshade part?
Yes, yes. The same lamp that they've been playing with back and forth the street. She reaches into that lamp and pulls a wine bottle from under the lampshade.
It's funny, too, because you can see the shadow of it. If you go back, you can see the shadow of it under it, but you have no idea that there's anything in there because it's lit evenly and everything. She pulls it out. It's so good.
And then he tries to stop her and she's like, you're right. There's a better way to celebrate. And she kind of like stands up at him. She's like, drop your pants.
And she calls him Sammy. She says, calls him Sammy.
Yeah.
Like she's in the mob or something.
Yeah. She's got the cigarette in her mouth. She's like, drop your pants. And he's like, what? And he's like, what are you talking about? She's like, I want you. And she's like, and he's like, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do this. She's like, why not? And it's a great moment. He's like, a gentleman has rules. You know, you've been drinking, he's like, you've been drinking a little bit, and a gentleman has rules. And second, you're kind of repulsive right now. which is amazing, but it's topped by her comeback because you just see her, the camera just lingers on her for a moment. Yeah. And she's like squinting up at him. She's got the cigarette, not even like up, but like kind of like dangling lazily
like hanging
on
her lip,
the corner of her mouth. And she just pulls it away. It's like, you can't take it.
Blows smoke in his face.
Yeah. And he starts kind of retreating, kind of get out of there. And she starts singing Bob Seger's We Have Tonight. The number of song credits that they had to get permission for in this episode.
Yeah.
And the next one after this, too. Luckily, because these are kind of central to the plot, they couldn't replace them with, cheaper songs when they re-ran it in syndication.
Right, or the wrong DVD song from the same artist.
Yeah. But a great bit of blocking when she's kind of putting her hand to his chest and kind of pushing him up against the wall.
Oh, God, all night.
And he starts to slide away to the side. And she kicks her foot up to block his path. And she's like, let's find a way. And she's, and they just kind of like smile at each other. And he's like, oh, God.
So I think in that moment, do you think that I wouldn't say break character, but she looks far too clear-headed for like a split second.
Yeah.
For not to be kind of Kirstie Alley and Ted Danson for a half second laughing, and then they go back into it.
There's this shared moment of we're having fun.
Yeah.
Which doesn't necessarily track with what they're both at emotionally in that moment. So,
right.
And then she's just like, say, well, get ready for the greatest night of your life, and just falls into his lap, like knocking him over, and they kind of collapse together.
She goes for it. I mean, she just drops herself right forward.
She does. It's like a trust fall, except it forwards. And then they cut to black, and that's it. It's to be continued. We get the resolution of this one in the next episode.
Yep.
Spoilers. The song that she's singing, We Have Tonight, will take on a little bit more prominence in the next episode, too. And last year on one of my music podcasts, I mentioned my brother and I were talking about Bob Seger, and I kind of made the point where I always think of him as the guy who sang Night Moves. And that's like the one and only song that I associated him with. That was what I said in the episode. And that take has aged terribly because immediately I like looked at his greatest hits and I'm like, I know all of these songs. I remember all of these songs. Like he's got a huge collection. I was like, why do I only think of him with that one?
Sometimes one stays with you though.
Mm. And then I was like, oh yeah, this song was in Cheers. It was a big deal in Cheers.
Right.
How did I not remember that? So apologies to Bob Seger. I undervalued you in that episode of my other show. It's, this is a really, really special episode. There's no, given like the subplot and everything, which on the face of it seems superfluous, and they almost call that out because it's like, who cares if we need to get a new jukebox? That's never been an issue. But even still, it doesn't feel like there's any fat on this episode. It's just every line is
that's
a gem.
What I think.
Yeah.
I think it builds. It starts at the beginning, and there's nothing about it at the very beginning that suggests it's just going to be a stellar episode. It seems good, I think, but it just gets better and better as you go through everything in the bar leading up to the shower, and the shower scene, the bridal shower scene, is even better. And then that, the it, it just even more so in the scene in Rebecca's apartment. And there's, yeah, like you said, there's nothing wasted. And I think there are a lot of lines in this that would be home runs in other episodes that have to fall into a lower place in this one because there's so much.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. You're right. From like the very beginning, it just seems it's funny. The dialogue, every line is a hit, but it just feels very light and kind of floaty. But the stakes, it keeps getting heavier and heavier, as the scenes go on.
Yeah, it really does. But as it gets heavier and heavier, it gets funnier and funnier. Like it doesn't forget that it's a comedy, even for a beat of time. Like you'll have a moment where she'll have an expression or something like that that is heavier. They'll be talking about something that is like psychologically dark underneath, but there's always humor as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that's perfect writing when it's like the humor increases like with the heaviness of it. Right. I think that's probably very hard to do.
Norm had 4 beers this episode, which brings him up to 895. As I mentioned, Kirstie Alley won the Emmy for this episode.
Yep.
Obviously well deserved, which brings us to the employee of the week. Rebecca was my clear winner, although, and I mentioned this kind of there were some contenders for runners up. Lilith. I almost gave it to Lilith.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, what about you? What did you think?
I don't think there's anybody that could be close to Rebecca. That's why like, I almost would focus on the rest of the cast because I think people say like, it's a standout performance or it's what, like a, I don't know, talking about like the best performance, someone stole the show. It's not even that. There's just something about the, all of a sudden, this character has an interior life that we didn't necessarily know. And it's not spilled all over the place. It's just coming out in this conversation with Sam.
Right.
It's hilarious, but it's very poignant at the same time. And it's just so well done. So, I mean, she's absolutely the employee of the week. If I had to have a second, I like the Lilith idea. I'm kind of torn between Frasier and Sam. Because I think Frasier is the parallel in the karaoke line and makes that a lot of fun. Yeah. And then, develops this obsession that becomes kind of an addiction as well. But then Sam, and really Ted Danson in his performance, but Sam has that supporting role. And I don't think she necessarily, it would matter, I don't know. So say like, I don't think she necessarily has to have someone to play off of in that last scene because she's so good, but he's the perfect person for it.
Right.
Just based on how their relationship or friendship or whatever has developed. But he does just enough, but he's not trying to do more than he needs to do in those scenes with her. Like she's driving the story and he's just there as like the perfect second person, I guess. I don't know how to explain that.
And I think
that's something that's like, for not being the one giving the major performance, I think he does an excellent job. So either be Frasier or Sam.
And I think that's something that he's done since the beginning of the show. I mean, considering he's the lead, he's, you know, for lack of a better word, the hero of the show. He's the one that we kind of root for. And he's just such a charismatic person. He is very willing and capable of just not being flashy in the scenes he doesn't need to be, of just being the sounding board for other people's jokes and other people's performances. Mm-hmm. He did that with Shelley Long a lot, and he does it with Kirstie Alley a lot too. And I think that's something great that he does. That he's like, you're right. He doesn't have to do any more than what he does. So he lets this be her scene, her moment. Incredible stuff there. You're right. The other things about this episode that I'm even now thinking about again with the lighting in her apartment when the lights are off and how well done that was to so that we know exactly where she is at all times, even though it looks pretty close to black. But then like the audio work of Norman Cliff when they have the helium voices and with the lollipop song and everything, it's like that was an additional level of
A clarity to it.
Yeah. And so just from a production standpoint, it doesn't seem like a big deal. But this was a good one for that.
Mm-hmm.
Getting into the home runs, I've got a winner and I mentioned two runners up, but like you said, there could have been a lot. My winner is when Sam says, "You're kind of repulsive right now." And then her clap back is, "You can't take it."
I
love that.
Yeah.
What was your high point?
My home run is the when she says that she's perfectly prepared to marry Robin and spend the rest of her life with him. She's just not particularly looking forward to it. I think there's a lot in there, but I just think the way she says it is hilarious.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's the entire... I feel like that's the entirety of her character's relationship with Robin, too. And it's just the funniest expression of it. Mm-hmm. What were your runners-up?
For runners-up, the first one, which I love, is Cliffy mentioning of Oriental origin. Much like yourself. Yeah, that's we're talking to Walter. It's that one. And then when Rebecca asks Sam if he retains water in the middle of the month, too. Those two are the big ones. But, like... I also could have thrown any moment with Lilith into that, any of her lines,
right.
Which is why I almost gave her she was my number one runner up, but yeah, it was just Cliff, much like yourself. So what about you? What were some of
that was one of mine of Oriental emotion, much like yourself. And then, I did like Woody saying like the flammable and inflammable. He's like, boy, I learned that the hard way. I think there's probably, so many of Rebecca. There's one part we didn't like, it's just a line that Sam asks if she's drinking again. And she says like, certainly not. I never stopped, and puts her glass down and waits and then picks it up. And she's like, now I'm drinking again. And it's just like some wizened barfly or some voice she uses. But there's there are a lot of moments like that could be runners up.
Yeah. Oh, incredible episode.
It's good. And I think you can just delve into it and get more out of it if you want, or you can just really appreciate the surface content, you know, if you don't want to think too deeply about the characters.
Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic. Thank you very much for being on this episode.
Can I add a note of trivia? I don't know if this will appeal
to
you.
Please do.
But I remember, because I watched this episode, I think I was 15 when it first came on, which I don't know why it was my very favorite from that moment, but it was. Because I wasn't living a life that had these sorts of conflicts in it, but I somehow really just took to this episode. But it was postponed from its original air date by the first Gulf War in 1991. It was originally supposed to air a week earlier.
I noticed there was a gap between
because the war started the week before. So what would have played out as four parts is interrupted by that Valentine's, because they did a Valentine's Day episode that year, remember?
Yeah.
And it's like 1, 2, 3, and then Valentine's Day episode, I think it was on Valentine's Day, and then the fourth one is after that.
Yeah.
And I think that's an interesting bit of historical trivia, cliff-worthy historical trivia.
I noticed that too, that that there was a gap week between when the previous episode, Achilles Hill, and this one.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, no, I remember a lot of shows that I was really enjoying were preempted by Iraq War coverage and being really upset about that at the time, because not really understanding the war or the whole nature of it. I was just like, why are they taking my shows off the air? This is bothersome.
I remember I was aware of what was going on because I paid attention to that type of thing at that time. And so I understood like the conflict and why it was being done and what was happening and all of that. But then I also was like, I think this means that Cheers won't be on. It's like we have to still have those concerns. You know?
There was a show at the time that I loved. It was what do they call it? It was like a remake of the old show Dark Shadows. It was a vampire show, a vampire like soap opera. And it was originally in like the 60s, ran forever because it was just like a daily program, like 5 days a week. They redid it as like an hour-long drama in prime time, and I was really digging it. I'd never seen the original at the time, but just like the look, the fact that it was about vampires, it was sexy for what it was at the time of my young impressionable age. But because of like Iraq war coverage, episodes kept being pushed back or airing out of order or being shifted to different days and different time slots. And it basically kind of killed the momentum of the show, and it ended up not getting a second season, or only did like 13 episodes.
Yeah.
And then it never came back, it ended on a cliffhanger. And because just like the everything else with the war, it didn't have the numbers to support because of it was never on a consistent time. And I always hated that. It
couldn't build an audience. Yeah.
Anywho, Marlene, I mentioned at the top, please let everybody else know where they can find you and your Cheers podcast that they can listen to if they haven't gotten enough.
My Cheers podcast is called Norm, a Cheers podcast. It's with a friend of mine that has never seen Cheers before. And then I watched it, the original airings, starting, I think, from the end of season 5 onward, and then kind of reconnected with it several years ago. So we decided to do this as a conversation back and forth with him being a new reviewer. So Norm, a Cheers podcast, and we're in the final season right now, considering what to do next. Nothing will be like it, though.
No, that's awesome. Congratulations to coming so close to the end. Thanks. I'm sure by the time I have you back on this show, you will be all done with it, and we'll know what your next project is. So.
Right.
But yeah, thank you again, and thanks to all of you who listen to Cheerscast and support this show by liking and sharing on social media and leaving comments on the website fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also support the Fire and Water Podcast Network on Patreon. Cheerscast is supported by the Right On Network and Jeff and Rick Presents Unpacking the Power of Power Pack. Go to patreon.com/FWPodcast to support your favorite show on the Fire and Water Network. Thanks everyone for listening, and until next time, to Lilith!
You drinking again?
Certainly not. I never stop. There. Now I stop. Now I'm drinking again.
So, you want to talk? Is this about getting married tomorrow? You getting cold feet?
Certainly not. I am perfectly prepared to marry Robin and spend the rest of my life with him. I'm just not particularly looking forward to it.